Imagine what it would be like if your compulsions, rather than being enemies that need to be eradicated or controlled, could become your guides on a wonderful journey back into a trust-filled connection with yourself and with your life. And imagine what your life would be like if you understood that your compulsions are not flaws or faults. Instead, they are parts of a highly crafted survival system that was created in order to take care of all of your unmet and unacceptable parts when you couldn't do that yourself. Now you can learn how to do this, so you won't need your compulsions anymore. By working with your compulsions in a whole new way, you can move beyond endless struggle into the joy of being fully alive. Hello, I am Mary O'Malley. After working for 20 years as a counselor, helping people heal compulsive behaviors, I wrote The Gift of Our Compulsions, a revolutionary approach to self-acceptance and healing. What we will be exploring together on this CD is how you can change your relationship to your compulsions so that they can not only be healed, but they can heal you too. This is a radical idea, but it is what happened to me and to the many people who are exploring my new approach to working with compulsions. My life is an example of what can happen when you change your relationship with your compulsions from hate and struggle to respect and love. My long and very painful journey into the dark regions of compulsions began when I was a small child. One of my earliest memories of compulsion was at the time of my parents' separation and subsequent divorce. I can remember coming home from school one day, when I was 12 years old, putting two pieces of toast in the toaster, buttering them when they were toasted as I was toasting two more. I then ate them as I buttered and toasted even more. It was my assembly line of desperation, trying to hide from my confused and very broken heart. And even though stuffing myself with toast temporarily numbed my pain, in the long run it made things much worse. As a teenager, I went on diet after diet, trying to control this urge to overeat. I was also taught to self-medicate by my mother, who gave me sleeping pills and tranquilizers, and by my stepmother, who gave me diet pills, which made me paranoid and hyperactive. When I went off to college, I added alcohol to the list. I kept on adding more compulsions, hoping that they would stop all of the heartaches and the self-judgment I was drowning in. I finally added street drugs to the mix, but none of it helped. And at the age of 24, I gained 97 pounds in 1 year while I was still drinking and taking drugs. I didn't want to live anymore. I had tried everything I could think of to control these urges. I went on every diet under the sun. When that didn't work, I went to therapist and hypnotist. I tried doctors and hospitals. I joined 12-step programs and therapy groups, and none of it worked. I would be able to control my urges for a while, and then they would come roaring back. Or I would stop one compulsion, and another took its place. I didn't understand at that time that what you resist persists, that what you try to control controls you. All I felt was that I was a weak-willed ninny, a complete failure at life. Today, I don't drink or use any drugs, and I live in a natural way around food. I also, rather than just surviving, am now truly thriving. How did I come to this place after being so completely lost in compulsive behavior? This happened because rather than trying to control my compulsions, I changed my relationship with them. I began to listen. As I became curious about my compulsions, I finally understood that they were trying to communicate many things to me, and that they held the treasures to the healing that I was truly longing for. My compulsions, rather than being problems to overcome, became allies on my journey back into a deep and fulfilling relationship with myself and with my life. From my own healing and from that of all the people I've counseled for the past 20 years, I created this new approach that not only heals compulsions, but allows them to heal us too. This work has been endorsed by the New York Times best-selling authors Eckhart Tolle and Dr. Larry Dossey, and also Alan Cohen, a well-known and respected teacher of awakening. Each one of them have said in their own way that my approach is the next step in our healing. Also, author Gary Zukav, Oprah's trainer Bob Greene, And even Dr. Phil are saying that to truly heal our compulsions, we have to deal with what is fueling them, and yet nobody has taught us how to do this. That is what this work is about, transforming whatever is fueling our compulsions so we don't have to be compulsive. And this is simpler and easier than you might imagine. On this CD, we will explore four different components of this work. First, we will look at what I mean when I use the word compulsion. Second, we'll take a straightforward look at how our old style of dealing with compulsions doesn't work. Third, we will begin to change our relationships with them by looking at how they have served us in the past and how they can serve us now. And finally, we'll explore a few basic skills so that you can begin to change your relationship to your compulsions. You'll learn how to move from manage them to engaging so that they can become your guides back into the healing that you long for. So let us begin. What do I mean when I use the word compulsion? In this work, compulsion is any recurring activity that you use to manage your experience around which you have little or no choice. Let me say that again. It is any recurring activity that you use to manage your experience around which you have little or no choice. This definition covers everything from making endless lists to heroin addiction to obsessive compulsive behavior. Of course, there are the more standard compulsions, such as overeating, overdrinking, gambling, and drugs. But there are also many hidden compulsions, such as shopping, worrying, television, relationships, and overworking. In fact, we can get compulsive about most any human behavior. We are compulsive about many things without even knowing it. It's only when access to a particular behavior is taken away that we can see how much it controls our life. Imagine what it would be like if you took your laptop and your cell phone on vacation, only to find that the place you are staying with has no cell phone or internet access. If these had been some of your compulsions, imagine the restlessness you would feel from the withdrawal of that access. Or let's take over-exercising. It's only when you sprain an ankle and you can't exercise or even move around like you're used to that you begin to see the unease that this compulsion is trying to mask. Even though we understand that we can be compulsive about most any activity, our core compulsion is to struggle, to try to control life, whether it is the length of the stoplight or our mate's behavior. If you had a little door on your forehead you could open and hear your inner conversations, you would notice that you are constantly trying to make yourself and your life better or different than what they are. This can be a noble cause, but for most of us, this internal struggle cuts us off from truly being alive. All of the other compulsions are an attempt to numb out from our inner struggles. In our compulsive urge to make control our primary relationship to life, we have become human doings, rushing our way through our lives, caught in a mental framework that has us thinking about life rather than living life. What we long for is to become human beings, and compulsions, if we listen to them, will become our guides. Let us now look at the second component, how we have been dealing with our compulsions and why it doesn't work. This is important if we want to change the way we relate to our compulsions from enemy to ally. Most of us are either lost in them or trying to control them because we see them as problems or defects, something bad or wrong that we must change or get rid of. Take weight loss. It is a multi-billion-dollar industry in the U.S., and yet 95 to 98% of every pound that is lost in America is gained back plus some within a year and a half. And one of the premier drug rehab hospitals in the United States considers it a success if only 17% of their patients stop using their drug of choice. Control doesn't work, not in the long run. The longer we try to control our compulsions, the more this sends us into a downward spiral where, as we fail to control our behaviors, our self-judgment turns into shame, fear turns into terror, and sadness turns into despair. We find ourselves in a vicious circle of controlling, only to be controlled, and then back to controlling again. What we resist persists. And if we do manage to wrestle one compulsion to the ground, usually another takes its place. We stop smoking and we eat more. We go on a diet and we shop more. We cut up our credit cards and we work more. I call our urge to control our compulsions the dandelion principle. Just like we may try to get rid of the dandelions in our yard by just yanking out the greens and the roots just grow more greens, we try to stop our compulsive behavior without going to the cause of the behavior, and they keep on coming back. We won't heal our compulsions until we get to the root of what is fueling our urge to be compulsive. The third component we are exploring is the possibility of changing how we relate to our compulsions. What would it be like if you could shift your relationship with your compulsion from a problem to be solved to a gift to be opened? From something that is wrong with you to an ally on the journey back to the joy that comes from being truly alive. You would know much more clarity and peace in your life and a sense of joy upon waking up every morning, fascinated about where the adventure of life will take you today. To make this shift, we will first look at how compulsions have served us up to this point, and then we will look at how they can serve us now to truly live the life that we long for. We start at the beginning by reminding ourselves of what our primary experience of life was when we were first born. There was a time when you loved being you. When you were very young, you hadn't yet learned how to second-guess yourself. You lived in your body and your heart, and whoever you were was enough. In fact, it was more than enough, for it was you. And even if you have no memories of this, your body does. It remembers when you were completely connected to yourself, open to the adventure of life. You felt your enthusiasm for living in every cell of your body, and it was wonderful just to be alive. All of us, some for a very short period of time and others for longer, knew this timeless place where we lived in full connection with ourselves and with our lives. Before we pulled back from life, we were unashakably attuned to the truth that we were okay, that life was okay, and that everything was going to be okay. We hadn't yet become caught up in watches and calendars, deadlines and disappointments. Instead, we were present for the mischief of a puppy, the magic of a butterfly's dance, and our fascination with having a belly button. It is also true that when you were young, there were times when life overwhelmed you, scared you, expected too much, and abandoned you. In the openness of your youth, not only were you available to the pure joy of being alive, you were also vulnerable to the actions and expectations of the people around you, the giants in your world, parents, siblings, aunts and uncles, teachers, neighbors, clergy, and a host of others began to influence you. Imagine an older sibling stealing your favorite toy and then taunting you with it. The powerless rage you feel is almost too much to bear. Imagine being 2 years old and having a huge dog run toward you while barking fiercely. And as you wail in fear, imagine your parent berating you for being such a ninny. Imagine flinging yourself into your father's lap full of love, only to be told, "Stop being such a bother." And imagine the pain of being the last one chosen for a team at recess, or of not having anybody to sit with in the lunchroom. Even if you don't remember any of these specific scenarios, you experienced them in some form, and they were very intense, for you felt these expectations, disappointments, and wounds more deeply and for longer periods of time when you were young. Time is different for a child. A day felt as long as a week does to an adult, and a week was a lifetime. And you, like many children, probably didn't have the people in your life that could help you meet and channel these feelings. So you experienced these sometimes scary and often overwhelming feelings by yourself. On top of being afraid of the powerful feelings that moved through you, you also got the message that most of your feelings were not okay. Verbally and non-verbally, you were talked out of your emotions. The adults in your life told you, "Big girls and boys don't cry. Don't make such a big deal out of it. That is nothing to be afraid of. Don't be so exuberant." Not only were you being trained to hide your feelings, but you were also being trained to distrust and dislike them. No little body could survive the onslaught of feelings you experienced. something had to be done to cope with them. Every time your world confused, threatened, or disappointed you, you learned to pull back, hold your breath, and tighten your body in the hopes that this would keep the painful feelings at bay. Your exuberance was confined in shallow breathing. Sadness and a deep sense of longing became hidden in your chest. Self-judgment became buried in your neck and shoulders. Fear and anger were tightly locked in your stomach. Despair, especially despair of losing sight of your natural, free-flowing joy, was concealed deep within your belly. Every time you contracted your body and tried to deny what you were experiencing, you froze another part of yourself deep inside. You then retreated to the world of the mind. It is said that we have 65,000 thoughts a day, and 95% of them are repeats from the day before. As adults, we think about life rather than experiencing it. The more you were trained to distrust your feelings, the more you lived in your mind. And the more you lived in your mind, the more you began to truly believe one of its core ideas: to be safe, you must be in control. Gone was the willingness to be open to life. Gone was spontaneous creativity. Gone was the pure joy of being alive. There are two major difficulties here. First of all, to have your primary relationship to life be one of control takes you away from being connected to life, and it is only in connection that we thrive. The second difficulty is that feelings are a healthy part of you. They are packages of information and energy that are always trying to communicate something to you, and they do not like to be frozen inside of you. They flow from the river of aliveness, and they love to move and dance through your being. So when they are disowned and hidden deep inside, they don't go away. In times when you are challenged by life, they have a tendency to rise to the surface and cause all sorts of havoc in your life. So you turn to the world of compulsions in order to try to control these unwanted guests. A sip of wine turns into glass after glass. A cookie turns into a dozen. Those 14-hour work days that make you high wreak havoc on your health and your relationships. The to-do list that used to help you keeps getting longer as you frantically run around trying to stay on top of everything. All of these compulsions bring the illusion of temporary comfort and control, but very quickly the painful urge for more, more, more turns into not enough. And after a wave of compulsion moves through, you are left with self-hatred and despair. No matter how passionately compulsions promise to bring you the peace that you long for, they never really will, and instead they bring devastation in their wake. You keep on going back to compulsions because you don't know how to heal them, nor do you know how to get to what you are truly hungry for, a deep and satisfying connection with yourself and with life. No wonder you've had moments, and maybe even days and months, where you were depressed and overwhelmed, sure that your compulsions are proof that you are not okay and that you will never, ever be free of them. Many of us have gone on this way for years, lost in our head, while our feelings are trying to grab our attention and our compulsions try to keep them at bay. We became even more cut off from ourselves when we were taught that compulsions were bad and must be controlled, and that if we couldn't control them, we were bad. To a greater or lesser degree, we've all gone in this journey away from ourselves, and we've all have used compulsions to take care of ourselves. And on this trip, our compulsions serve us in two very important ways. The first is they numb us to our deep feelings, so we can keep them hidden until we have grown up enough to meet them and transform them back into the openness we knew when we were young. It is very important to be able to hide these feelings while we are still in reaction to them. We need to mature before we can allow them a voice and be able to listen to what they have to say in curiosity and in compassion. The second way compulsions have served us is that they are a temporary balm for our homesickness. We all carry a deep longing to know the aliveness and magic that we knew as children, and compulsions give us a hint of what it was like when we lived in deep connection with ourselves. Just imagine the comfort of a full stomach, the happiness of an alcoholic high, the thrill of shopping. But the high from a wave of compulsion is not the true high we are longing for, the high of being authentically ourselves, so it is never, ever enough. Quickly it turns into an urge for more, 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 leaving self-judgment and despair in its wake. Even though compulsions have taken care of us, many of us are coming to the realization that the price we pay is way too high. Compulsions promise us the sun, the moon, and the stars, but ultimately bring only devastation. We need to see that our compulsions and the feelings that fuel them will not go away until we can be present for them with understanding and compassion. We also need to see that our endless craving for comfort from the outside of ourselves will never satisfy us, for that is not what we are truly longing for. What we truly long for is to be comfortable in our own skins. What we truly long for is a richer, deeper, more healing comfort, the comfort of loving ourselves from the inside out, opened and engaged with the great adventure called our life. We can know this kind of connection with ourselves. In fact, it is our birthright. So by changing our relationships with our compulsions, they can become wonderful guides on this journey to a safe and love-filled inner life. We now arrive at the fourth component we are exploring on this CD, how our compulsions can serve us on the journey back to ourselves. We have explored how compulsions, rather than being defects, are highly crafted survival systems that have taken care of us while we were far away from ourselves. We've taken a hard look at the truth that managing compulsions doesn't bring us the healing we long for. And we've realized that our relationship with our compulsions needs to change. Now it's time to explore how they can become our guides on the journey back to the joy of being fully alive. Odd as it may seem, compulsions, along with all the fear and self-judgment and despair they bring, exist to heal us to our core. They come from the deepest and wisest parts of us and bring all the experiences we need to move into true empowerment. One of the core gifts that compulsions will give us is that they won't let go as long as we are trying to get rid of them. In fact, they just get more powerful. They will only yield when they have taught us how to be present for whatever we are experiencing. There's a wonderful story about Sakka, the ruler of the Devas. While Sakka was out visiting the far reaches of his land, a sullen, pot-bellied dwarf came to visit the castle. Finding the king absent, he went up and sat on the throne. This was an act of supreme sacrilege. Sakka's followers tried to bully, shame, taunt, and scare the dwarf away, but to their dismay, he only grew bigger and stronger in exact proportion to the resistance to his presence. The king was called back from his journey in order to get rid of this unwanted guest. Upon entering the throne room, instead of challenging the dwarf, he draped his robe over its shoulders and knelt in respect before him. With every act of welcoming, appreciation, and recognition, the dwarf became smaller and smaller until finally he vanished. Compulsions are our dwarfs, and they are here to teach us that the art of true transformation comes not from trying to change what our experience is. It comes from the ability to be compassionately curious about whatever we are experiencing. I call this ability to be present for our immediate experience the art of engagement. Rather than trying to eradicate our compulsions, which just makes the dwarf on the throne inside of us bigger, engagement is about listening to and learning from them. For when we are engaged, we discover that hidden within every compulsive action are the keys to our healing. Engagement is not permission to indulge in compulsions. That would be just living in more unconsciousness. Rather, it is the willingness to stop fighting our compulsions so that we can see what is going on. Remember those puzzles from your childhood that showed a drawing with objects hidden within it that you had to find? It may have been a knife drawn into the trunk of a tree or a cat in a cloud. You had to shift your perspective to see what was there. As we shift our perspective on our compulsions, becoming curious rather than controlling, we discover that all the clues to the healing that we long for lie in whatever experience we are having right now. Our compulsions amplify those clues so that we can see them more clearly. Engagement is neither for nor against the compulsion. It's simply a passionate interest in what is happening and a compassionate meeting of what is there. When we start listening with curiosity to what is happening before, during, or after a wave of compulsive activities, the clouds engulfing our heads lift, and we become able to see the signs pointing the way along the path. Our attention not only fleshes out the clues, but it also highlights the hidden parts of us that are fueling the compulsion. And in adding compassion to our attention, these parts are transformed in the vast regions of our hearts. Rumi, a 13th century poet, wrote about the power of being present for our experience in his poem, The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning is a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. What a statement that is. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. What Rumi is alluding to is one of the great secrets of transformation. The challenges in our lives are here to clear us out for some new delight. We are not given difficulties because we have screwed up or because the higher power in charge of it all has it in for us. Just as knights of old knew that they needed a noble adversary in order to develop their skills, we too need the great teacher of our challenges to recognize and live as ourselves. The challenges of our lives are like weights on a weight machine. They strengthen within us the capacity to become conscious human beings. You are not compulsive because you are a weak-willed ninny, and you are not a failure for having been unable to control them. In fact, the opposite is true. For if you had been able to control them, you would only be half alive, and you wouldn't be listening to this CD, exploring the journey back to living from your essence. Right now, feel what it would be like if, instead of judging yourself for being compulsive, you honored the courage of your soul to take on compulsions in order to grow into the fullness of your potential. Now that we've looked at how we can heal through changing our view of compulsions, let us look at some specific steps that will help us to make this shift. To start responding to our experience rather than always living in reaction, we need to be reminded over and over again to bring the light of our compassionate attention to what we are experiencing. Not what we want to be experiencing, but exactly what we are experiencing right here, right now. All the skills that allow us to be compassionately present for our experience are a part of what I call treasure hunting. For that is exactly what happens when we turn our attention within. We discover all the treasures that have been waiting for us for a long, long time. There are two reasons I call this treasure hunting. The first is that treasures are always hidden in the sensations and feelings that we have habitually run from. If we look closely, we will notice life's inclination to hide its treasures in the dark. In practically every myth handed down through the ages, both the keys to the adventure and the treasures themselves are usually hidden in the dark. The dragon sits on the golden egg. The princess is protected by a moat full of crocodiles. The evil queen possesses the magic wand. The necessity of the dark, of the difficult, challenging aspects of our lives, is woven through Homer's Odyssey, Dante's Inferno, and even The Wizard of Oz. One of the best ways I have described this is to imagine a huge and ferocious lion chasing you, and you are running as fast as you can. This is what we have been doing with all the feelings that fuel our compulsions. When the lions of feelings come close to the surface, we put on our running shoes and sprint. We eat more chocolate. We find more things to do, surf the internet, get out our credit cards. Sometimes you can outdistance the lion. Eventually, if you are lucky, you won't be able to run anymore. Falling to the ground, you are sure you're going to be devoured. As the lion screeches to a halt beside you, much to your amazement, he doesn't take a bite out of you. Instead, he turns into a pussycat, and as his mouth opens, you see resting on his tongue a gift that he has been trying to deliver for years. The lion is your compulsion and all the feelings you've been running from. And just like the lion, they hold great treasures. But you have to stop running to receive the gifts. The second reason I call this process treasure hunting is that as we meet ourselves with curiosity and compassion instead of turning away, all the frozen parts of ourselves can be transformed back into the free-flowing aliveness they came from. As we bring the light of our attention into what we are experiencing, our feelings are transformed, and we get to know and experience the exact opposite of the feelings that we have been denying. In my experience, I was able to meet my terror, I discovered courage. As I was able to meet my anger, I discovered compassion. And I was able to meet my despair, I discovered I was never, ever alone. Let us look now at the foundation of the skills of treasure hunting. To turn toward ourselves rather than away, especially when we are compulsive, is radically different than what we have been taught, but it is the pathway to freedom. In treasure hunting, there are many different and practical skills that will allow you to make this turn. On this CD, we will explore three foundations of these skills, which are the power of human attention, the healing of compassion, and the phenomenal potential of living in questions. The power of focused human attention is beyond your wildest imaginations, and we are only beginning to tap into it. Attention joined with a tender heart can transform everything we have held within us in judgment and in fear. And when compassionate attention is coupled with skillful questions, you have an unbeatable combination. We will first look at the healing of attention, which is simply the ability to be curious about whatever is happening right now. Curiosity is neither for nor against whatever it focuses on. It is simply interested in what is happening right now, whether it is a feeling inside of us, the beauty of a sunset, or the tears of a loved one. As young children, we were naturally curious about whatever was happening. But as we grew up, we were taught that our power came from fixing, changing, dominating, and controlling our lives, especially compulsions. This has kept us on an endless pendulum of controlling only to be controlled. The power of our attention has become like weak winter sunlight. When we relearn how to be curious about what is happening, it is like putting the weak sunlight through a magnifying glass. That light can literally start a fire. It is the same with focused attention. It can transform our compulsions and the feelings fueling them. Let us explore what focused attention looks like. After you listen to these directions, turn off the CD, close your eyes, and take a few long, slow breaths. Then bring your attention to the sounds around you. Imagine that you have just come to Earth from another planet, and when you go home, you have to describe what this planet sounds like. Be curious. There are loud sounds and soft sounds. There are sounds that are very close and others that are far away. If your attention is wandering a lot, count how many different sounds you hear. When you are done, open your eyes and begin the CD again. What you just did was pull your attention out of the story in your head and instead focused it on life the moment it appears out of mystery, using sounds as an anchor. But if you are like most people, the muscle of your attention is not very strong, so you probably were only able to be present for a moment or two before ideas about life took over again. Most of us have left the healing of curiosity far behind in our childhood. It has been captured by a constant stream of thought that chase themselves through our heads all day long, like a dog chasing its tail. But just as a baby learns how to walk by first learning how to lift up its head, you can, step by step, learn how to strengthen your attention so that you can be curious about what is happening rather than being in reaction to it. And it is pure attention that, as you learn how to take it into your inner experience, will transform what it focuses on, healing whatever has been fueling your compulsions. The second foundation of the skills is the power of compassion. Compassion is the ability to feel pain, both our own and others, without falling into it. It is the art of meeting whatever happens with an open heart, and it is the great reweaver of the tattered threads of our lives. Compassion allows us to move out of always trying to make ourselves better or different, and instead allows us to meet ourselves exactly as we are. Even though the dictionary defines compassion as the ability to feel another's pain, where it is truly learned is with our own pain. The schoolroom of compassion is our own life, our fears, our rages and judgments, and our tendency to turn away from our pain, numbing it out through our compulsions rather than meeting it in the vast healing of our hearts. A wonderful definition of compassion is nonviolent accompaniment. We do great violence to ourselves by constantly trying to get rid of our pain. Compassion is the willingness to let go of that violence and be present for the ebb and flow of pain in our lives. And from that comes the joy of being able to accompany ourselves, no matter what is appearing, down the paths of our lives. We are so extremely skilled in fueling our compulsions by bruising ourselves where we are already bruised, and ignoring the places inside of us that are the most broken, painful, and incomplete, claiming them as clear evidence that we are defective. We are also steeped in the illusion that pain is to be feared. It takes courage to see how brutal we are with our own pain. It takes courage to make space for all we have held in contempt for so long. But courage comes from a French word that means big heart, and compulsions, if we listen to them, will reveal to us all the places inside that truly need the balm of our own tender heart. Since everything that fuels our compulsion is in deep need of the healing of compassion, let us take a journey together into the heart. Take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Then lift your hand and look at it for a moment, this hand that has done so much for you. Realize at one time this was a child's hand. It held baby bottles, favorite toys, and the handlebars of tricycles. Allow this to open you to the truth that at one time you were wide-eyed and innocent, so full of the longing to be fully who you were and be loved for it. Now let your hand go and close your eyes. There is still a child inside of you that has been waiting your whole life for you to mature enough to meet it with the kind of love and understanding it needed when these feelings that were so overwhelming when it was young were frozen inside. In order to understand what this child needs from you, imagine walking down a residential street. From a distance, you hear the faint sounds of a child crying. As you come around the corner, you see this child sitting on the curb with tears rolling down her cheeks. Imagine that whatever you are experiencing, the child is experiencing too. If you are feeling all alone, imagine that the child's daddy has just moved out and because of a divorce, he will be gone forever, she thinks. If you feel very confused, not knowing your way out of a particular situation, imagine that she is lost and doesn't know her way home. If you find yourself hating yourself, imagine that all the neighborhood kids have just told her that she is a dork and they don't want to play with her. Allow your heart to open to her pain. Now take a few moments to imagine how you would comfort her. Pause the CD and contemplate this. And then when you are ready, start the CD again. Now, whatever you discovered in your imagination, give that to her, whether it is a hug, a kind word, or a hand to hold. Feel the feeling of your heart touching hers in understanding and compassion. Whatever you imagined and whatever you felt is exactly what you want from you. Now turn the light of this mercy towards yourself. Place your hand over your heart and give to yourself whatever you gave to this child. Say the words, or imagine the touch, feeling this experience as deeply as you can. It is this kind of meeting of ourselves that dissolves everything that fuels our compulsions, and whether you believe it or not, you are worthy of acceptance and love. Stop the CD now and give yourself this understanding and mercy. This exercise is just one of the many ways you can open your heart so that you can touch your compulsions and the feelings that fuel them with the healing of tenderness and mercy. And just as you soften and open when somebody meets you with kindness, your compulsions will melt under the warmth of your compassion. Let us now explore how to bring compassionate curiosity into our inner experience. Meeting our inner experience is not about just feeling our sensations and feelings. If you only feel them, the chances are you will get lost in them and then want to run away even more. Meeting our experience is about being present for what we are experiencing. This is about relating to what's going on inside of us rather than being lost in it. It is the difference between saying, "Oh, I'm so afraid," and, "Ah, this is fear." This meeting of our experience takes the power away from what fuels our compulsions. In order to feel what I'm saying, imagine that you are being confronted by an angry person. If you get angry in return, you merely fuel their anger. If you ignore them with a sense of superiority, you do the same. But if you ask them to sit down and tell you about their experience, letting them know that you truly want to understand, they cannot hold on to their anger. Try this sometime with someone you aren't highly reactive to and watch the magic. You can learn how to do the same thing with the feelings that are fueling your compulsions. As you discover how to be present for them, listening to what they have to tell you in a compassionate way, they lose their power over you. There is a wonderful story told by John Gray, author of Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, that reveals the power of meeting our experience rather than turning away. He was so late in picking up his 7-year-old daughter that she had been standing in front of the school all by herself for a long time, and this can be overwhelming for a child. When he finally arrived, she was very upset, but he didn't react to her in the way that we were usually reacted to as a child. He didn't say, "Get in the car, you're okay now," which doesn't acknowledge your feelings, or, "Get in the car and stop, you're crying," or, "If you don't stop crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about." Rather than ignoring or discounting her feelings, he sat down beside her and was present for her experience. Because of this, the feelings didn't get frozen inside of her. After rivers of tears, she felt healthy anger and asked if he was going to pick her up tomorrow. When he answered yes, she asked him if he was going to be on time. When he said yes, she then asked him to come early, and he did. The doorway to our healing is to bring the kind of compassionate attention that John Gray brought to his daughter to our own feelings. With just a little bit of turning within, you begin to understand that what you've been running away from your whole life are very young feelings that you froze within you long ago. And instead of being the flawed and defective parts of you, they are just vulnerable parts that need your help to overcome their hurt and fear. It finally becomes clear that as long as you run away from them, you will be caught in the world of compulsion, cut off from the joy of being truly alive. You then realize with stunning clarity that it's okay to allow your feelings to be a part of you again. We have now arrived at the heart of the matter, where healing and being healed by our compulsions occur. Are you ready to go treasure hunting? Your readiness to treasure hunt is signaled by two things. One is your increased ability to shine the light of your attention on whatever you are experiencing as you are experiencing it. The other is the power of your heart to transform whatever sensations, thoughts, and feelings are asking for your attention. Through your compassionate curiosity, old patterns dissolve. Your attention is then freed from reaction so that you can listen to the deep knowing within you. In this listening, you can make wise and skillful choices that allow you to open again to the joy of being fully connected to yourself and to life. We have all learned not to feel what we feel, distracting ourselves instead. We drown out the signals from our inner worlds with our compulsions. So how do we respond rather than react in order to gather the inner treasures that are waiting for us? It may seem impossible at first glance, but I assure you that it is simpler and safer than you can imagine. On this CD, you will learn how to do this by exploring the sensations of your body. Your sensations can be your training ground for learning how to notice what you are experiencing and then to transform your experience through spaciousness and mercy. In the beginning, seeing what is happening in your head can be a bit difficult, for the thoughts that run you can be very seductive. and the feelings that ensnare you can either be very elusive or deeply intense. You can get so identified with them that you become lost in a story about what you are experiencing rather than experiencing it. But sensations can be your anchor. Every moment of your life, a river of sensations flows through your body. And these sensations are not just random experiences. Your body is speaking to you all the time from a depth of wisdom beyond your comprehension. In fact, the body is one of the wisest and dearest friends you will ever have. The human body has been around for a very long time, and it has developed the capacity to survive by being highly tuned in to exactly what is going on. While our heads are spinning all sorts of tales about what we should be experiencing, the body will not lie. If somebody has made us angry, even if we try to hide our anger, even if we tell ourselves we're not angry, our body will raise our heartbeat and tighten our stomach. It tells us the truth of the situation. To acknowledge the truth of what is happening in our bodies, we need to understand the difference between basic sensations and sensations that are fueled by feelings. Basic sensations are like a tickle in your throat, the coolness of the air, the pressure of a chair against your thighs. These sensations are not generated by feelings. There is another level of sensations that are generated by feelings, that lump in your throat, the butterflies in your stomach, the empty feeling in your belly. In other words, feelings generate sensations in your body. Think of what happens in your body when you are excited or afraid, and you will know what I mean. At the beginning, instead of looking for the feelings that fuel your compulsions, simply focus on sensations, for your body can teach you how to be present with what you are experiencing. Over the years, I have seen people develop the ability to be present for themselves just by paying attention to their sensations, and they are delighted. "I can feel myself again," they oftentimes say. As you develop your ability to be present through your sensations, the feelings that generate them will begin to reveal themselves. You notice that the lump in your throat reveals a deep sadness, the tightness in your chest, anxiety. That knotted fist in your belly reveals deep fear. And rather than reacting to these feelings and going to your compulsions, you can be present for them in the same way you learn how to be present for a deep hunger in your stomach or tension in your neck. Let us practice exploring our sensations. Close your eyes and take a few deep breaths to calm and center yourself. As your mind quiets, bring your attention to your body and simply be curious about what you are experiencing, allowing your attention to be like a flashlight searching your body. Don't rush it. Allow the sensations to come to you like a Polaroid picture developing. Then speak the truth to yourself about what you discover. You may be able to name tingles, warmth, coolness, tightness, pain, throbbing, tickles. Whenever your attention wanders away, gently bring it back to your sensations. Stay curious as long as you can, even if it's just for a moment or two. This will deepen your ability to relate to what you are exploring rather than getting lost in it. If you want, pause the CD now and explore for as long as you can stay curious. And then when you are done, come back to the CD and we'll move on. As you bring your attention to your immediate experience, transformation is beginning to occur. Even though you may not be able to feel it, your sensations are changing under the light of your attention. They may not change much at first, for your attention is not yet very strong, but they are changing nonetheless. And this becomes even more dramatic as we bring the light of our attention into our feelings. This is a good exercise to do every morning for a few minutes before you get out of bed. You can also do it whenever there's a pause in your life, when you're on hold for an appointment, standing in line, or in a restaurant waiting for your food to arrive. As you explore your experience with curiosity, you may find that a sensation, rather than letting go, seems to become amplified through your focused attention. This does not mean that your attention is amplifying anything. Now that you've lifted the fog of your resistance, you are simply becoming more aware of what is going on. And even though it may seem like your experience is being amplified, the opposite is true. The light of your attention is beginning to work its magic on this sensation. You may also find that when you are first invited to pay attention, that what you're experiencing in your body, you can't feel a thing. This is very common. We have been so well trained to deny our immediate experience that when we first become curious about it, all we may discover is a fog or a blank wall. You may even feel quite a bit of resistance to experiencing your sensations. Don't be dismayed. This is all very normal in the beginning. The ability to bring your attention to your immediate experience and then to speak the truth to yourself about what you are experiencing is what will eventually help you to unravel the tangled web of your compulsions. It may take a while for you to fully understand the phenomenal power of what we are exploring here, for the mind deeply believes in fixing, changing, dominating, and understanding. But these compensatory behaviors are nothing in comparison to the power of bringing the light of your focused and compassionate attention to your immediate experience. When people I work with learn how to pay attention to their experience, they are often stunned by how completely they've been able to pull the wool over their own eyes, sometimes for decades. They may be amazed, but they are also delighted, for they find it such a relief to finally be real about what is going on. As you move from reaction to response, meeting yourself as you are, your focused attention will transform whatever it rests upon, dissolving many of the sensations, feelings, and thoughts that fuel your compulsions. The more you do this, the quicker your old patterns will melt away. Let us now couple curiosity and compassion with the third foundation for the skills, the power of living in questions. This is one of the most transformative tools available to us. No matter where we are, no matter what is happening, living in questions can bring clarity when we are confused, courage when our strength has failed us, hope when we are filled with despair, and vision when we don't have a clue about which way to go. These questions can also transform not only the sensations and feelings that are fueling our compulsions, but also our compulsions themselves. Notice that I use the word living in questions. That is different from just asking questions. Our old way, ask a question and look for an answer, is necessary in our day-to-day lives. But asking questions in this way can often bring us frustration, especially when we ask them about compulsions. This was certainly my experience. Looking for answers about why I was compulsive and how I could stop was exhausting, confusing, and frustrating. Most of the time, I couldn't find the answers I was looking for. And if I did, I couldn't hold on to them, or very quickly they became obsolete. It wasn't until I learned the power of questions is in the questions themselves that the clouds began to lift and I was able to start healing. In my work, there are two ways of working with questions. The first, which I call check-in questions, invites us into our immediate experience, helping us to respond rather than react. These questions focus our attention in a spacious and curious way. The second type is open-ended questions, where we ask a question and then let it go. We don't do anything with it except ask. This type of question taps us into the wisdom at the heart of life. All the skills for healing our compulsions are encapsulated in four check-in questions and four open-ended questions. Each of these questions allows us to literally transform our compulsions and the sensations and feelings fueling them so that we can again know the joy of being fully who we are. In this CD, we will explore the check-in questions, focusing mainly on the first question. The four check-in questions are as follows. The first question, in this moment, what am I experiencing? This question invites you into the power of curiosity. The intent of this question is to focus your mind on what is happening right now. It is about dipping the finger of your attention into the river of your experience. The second check-in question is, for this moment, Can I allow this to be here? This question cultivates the power of allowing. It moves you from reaction to response, giving whatever you are experiencing the spaciousness it needs to heal. The third question is, in this moment, can I touch this with my heart? This question accesses the healing of compassion. It invites you to touch whatever is present with the tenderness of an open heart. And the fourth question, right now, what do I truly need? This question opens you to the power of listening to your own wisdom. The intent here is to awaken the wellspring of wisdom within you that knows what is for your highest good in any situation. Let me now give you an example of what it's like to work with the unbeatable combination of living with questions and compassionate attention. On September 11, 2001, when I turned on the television and learned about the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center in New York, I stood there in stunned disbelief. Almost immediately the phone began to ring. Rather than being present for my own experience, I became present for other people, which at that time was appropriate. I went on to work with people individually and then led a group. After the last person left, I immediately felt the urge to eat and eat and eat. For the first time in ages, this feeling was so strong that the idea of going to the grocery store was dangerously seductive. It was so powerful that I was able to make it almost to the door before curiosity kicked in, and I thought, what is going on inside of me right now? Immediately, my urge to be compulsive responded by saying, "Don't mess with me. We are going to the store." I knew that if I said no at that time, the compulsion would just take over. Instead, I said, "Okay, if you wanted to go to the store, that's okay. But I want to remind you of how we feel when we take care of ourselves in this way." Because I had spent time in the past truly allowing myself to experience how overeating felt in my body, I was able to remember that if I went to the store, it wouldn't help anything. In fact, it would only make matters worse. My compulsion grudgingly agreed, but it was still terrified of all the feelings that were burbling inside of me. It was even more terrified of not crawling into the so-called comfort of overeating. So I gave it a compromise. "Let's go sit on the porch for 5 minutes and check in with what's going on inside. And if you still want to go to the store after that, then that is okay." As I sat on the chair on my front porch and took some long, slow, deep breaths and turned my attention within, I asked the first question. In this moment, what am I experiencing? What was most evident was the overwhelming urge to eat. As this question pulled my attention into the sensations of my body, I could feel a very uncomfortable knot in my solar plexus that I desperately wanted to run away from. As I brought my attention to it and began exploring this sensation, the feeling that was causing the knot began to reveal itself, and it was deep grief. "For this moment, can I allow this to be here?" was my next question. This question opened me up so that rather than resisting the experience, I could give it the space to be. As the grief began to flow within me, I didn't get lost in it. Instead, I honored it and I cried for the earth, for all the human beings who had died, and for the people who had lost friends and loved ones on this tragic day. I even cried for the terrorists, for they had to be deeply wounded to plan and celebrate such an act. I then called on the third question, "In this moment, can I touch this grief with my heart?" It opened up a vast space of compassion and mercy within me, and I unfolded my grief in its healing balm. From this merciful place, the wave of compulsion met the shore of my heart and simply evaporated. I then asked the fourth question, "Right now, what do I truly need?" It was immediately clear I needed to keep my heart open to my own grief and to the grief of the people around me. This allowed me to be truly present with myself and all the people I worked with for the rest of the day. Asking these questions freed me from the compulsion to hide from my pain by overeating. So how can you strengthen the muscle of your attention and open the door of your heart so that you can heal your compulsions and be healed by them in return? On this introductory CD, I am providing you with a leading-edge healing process that will enable you to begin to practice curiosity and compassion in your life, coupled with the power of living in questions. At the beginning of the journey back to yourself, it is best to work with just the first question and to work with it when your compulsions are not present. Remember the story of the tortoise and the hare? We were oftentimes like the hare, thinking we can dash to the finish line by managing our compulsions. You might be tempted to use these skills to do that in the beginning. But just as the hare failed over and over, you will find yourself back at the starting line again. In the meantime, the tortoise, which is slowly and surely strengthening his ability to be present for his experience, gets closer and closer to the finish line. The first question, in this moment, what am I experiencing, is the main question. It is an invitation to bring your attention out of the struggles in your head and have it fully be here for life in this moment. And if you can't do that, it is an invitation to begin to explore what is causing you to be struggling with life. Before you bring this question into the experience of compulsion, practice it when life is fairly calm so that you can strengthen the muscle of your attention. Just like a baby needs to strengthen its muscles in order to crawl and then walk, you need to strengthen the muscle of your attention so that you can dissolve your struggles through being present for them. So I invite you to take the curiosity of the first question into your daily life. Because we are so used to being caught in the forward momentum of the story in our head, at the beginning it's helpful to attach this question to something you do repeatedly throughout the day. I do it with washing my hands after using the bathroom. I take a deep breath and ask, in this moment, what am I experiencing? And then I bring my attention into exactly what is happening right here, right now. The sound of the water, the feel of the soap on my hands. And if I find myself struggling with life, I oftentimes wink at myself in the mirror. Some people connect this question with the cups of tea or coffee they drink throughout the day, or all the stoplights they pause at on their way to and from work. You can even get a beeping watch to remind yourself every hour to be curious. Another fun thing to work with are sticky notepads. They are great aid in writing down the questions and putting them in various places around your world. When you ask this question and find yourself resisting whatever you're experiencing, there is a wonderful mantra you could say to yourself that will soften your resistance. This mantra is, "It's okay." These two little words can wake you up out of struggle and reaction and invite you back into the healing of response. There are two things that living in this question, coupled with the mantra, "It's okay," will give you. First, it will show you that most of the time you are off someplace else in your mind, trying to do life, and it becomes evident that there's a lot you are missing when you're gone, like life. Martha Graham, the great dance instructor, once said, "Most of the moments of our lives go by untouched and unused." The second thing living in this question will do is strengthen the muscle of your attention so that you can begin to become curious about what is happening when you are compulsive. When you are ready to bring your compassionate attention into the experience of compulsion, all the skills you will need are covered in my book, The Gift of Our Compulsions. In the book, I expand on all that I've explored here, along with the two other foundations of the skills, which are open breathing and cultivating the art of being. We then explore the four check-in questions, the four open-ended questions, and how you can work with each one of them in the healing of your compulsions. I would like to end with some ideas that will allow you to stay on this journey back to yourself. First of all, you won't change your old pattern of managing your compulsions overnight. We have all deeply bought into the belief that we are compulsive because we are doing something wrong, and that the only way to get back into balance is to stop the compulsive behavior. In fact, it is important not to just stop managing your compulsions. It is far better to slowly and surely add engagement skills, and then naturally your compulsive urges will fade away. We have also been trained to expect immediate results. "Lose 10 pounds in 10 days, says the tabloid headline, and we buy into it hook, line, and sinker. What we are exploring here is the pathway to lifelong freedom, and it's not a quick fix. One of the greatest gifts you can give yourself is patience. It has taken you a long time to get thoroughly lost in your compulsions and the belief that you must control them. It will take some time for you to completely find your way out of this world of struggle. You can try the quick fixes, and you probably will, only to find yourself more deeply caught in the maze of disempowerment, self-judgment, and despair. But every wave of compulsion comes with information for you. Once you learn how to listen, you can walk, step by step, out of the world of compulsions. Even though it takes time to unravel the web, what we have explored in this CD really is the shortcut. Though it is gradual and at times difficult to be present with your experience, it is well worth the effort. Know that each moment that you turn toward yourself with curiosity and understanding is another step on the path to freedom. Each time you can open rather than close, even if it's opening to how closed you are, and each time you can respond rather than react, is a healing moment. In the beginning, when you let go of your tight grip on control, your compulsions may go a little crazy for a while. It's okay to draw upon your management tools, but this wave of reaction will calm down as you explore the art of engagement. For underneath this rebellion, your compulsions have a deep longing to be included in the healing consciousness of a curious mind and an understanding heart. As you begin to be present for your compulsions and the feelings that fuel them, you need to learn how to trust resistance. In your journey back to yourself, there are times to be curious about what is going on, and there are times to turn away. Trusting resistance allows you to stay in the healing journey for the long haul. The biggest downside to not honoring your resistance is that it will inevitably turn into rebellion. If I had said no to my compulsion on 9/11 as I was heading out the door, it would have taken over. But I didn't push. Instead, I gave it options. I worked with honoring exactly where it was, and then it was willing to work with me. To trust your resistance is to learn how to be a warrior rather than a soldier. Rather than seeing enemies, a warrior realizes that to reach their true potential, they need noble adversaries. Their intent isn't to destroy. Rather, it's to engage with their adversary so that they come away with more of themselves. In this engagement, they are very observant, knowing that their true power comes from respecting and getting to know their adversary, watching and learning how he or she operates. Fighting is the last option for a warrior who understands that fighting is a crude and messy way to triumph, and that such triumphs will only be temporary. Compulsions won't let go until they teach us how to be true warriors. On this journey back to yourself, some days will be easier than others. Some days you will be able to let go of the urge to be compulsive, and some days you won't. Some days you'll be able to learn how to be merciful, and some days you won't. Some days you will use all that we have explored to try to stop your compulsion, and some days you will just be curious. At times you will feel like you're making lots of progress, only to experience what feels like backsliding. But there is no such thing. The old adage that life is about taking 3 steps forward and 2 back is just a perception of the human mind. It is all forward progress, even when it seems like everything is falling apart. Life is a very intentional, highly organized process that offers you exactly what you need to awaken. There will come a time when you will be able to see and to live in the truth that life can be trusted, open to, and fully lived. Drop by drop, as you add curiosity and compassion to your experience, the waves of your compulsions will become smaller, with more space between them, and you will become even more curious about the gifts each wave brings. So give yourself time. You don't have to do this all at once. You just have to work with what is going on right now. Know that there be a phase in the beginning when it doesn't seem like much is happening, and you may feel discouraged. Because you cannot see that life, step by step, is bringing you back to yourself, it's easy to mistrust it. But over and over, I have seen people who, measuring their progress by the old standard, don't feel like they're making very much headway. And then, just like the sun breaking through the clouds on a winter day, they turn a corner, and their whole relationship with their compulsions and with themselves changes. It's wonderful to share in their joy during these times of inner transformation. I also want you to understand that ultimately you don't have to do anything with what is being offered in this CD. Let these ideas become like seeds planted in the fertile ground of your longing to be healed. They will grow inside of you in their own time and in their own way. And what they will grow into is your truth, not somebody else's idea of how you should heal, but your unique path back to yourself. For nobody knows how to heal you better than you. It is important before we end our time together to claim a few of the core gifts that engaging with our compulsions brings. Of course, the first one, the one that we have been exploring here in depth, is the joy of becoming ourselves again, not an idea of what we should be, but the real thing. The second gift is the knowing that we are not alone, that a power greater than we exists. This power is so awesome that it keeps the planet spinning as they do with a precision that is mind-boggling. It also orchestrates the seasons with an astonishing rhythm and even permeates every cell of our body. When we try to heal our compulsions solely with our minds, we are relying on limited power. But when we learn how to use our mind to be curious, cultivating an alert appreciation for what is really going on inside of us, a wiser part of us, connected to the wisdom of life, begins to have a voice in the process. As we learn how to listen, answers come flowing up from deep inside of us with a clarity that is a joy to behold. The third gift that compulsions will give us is the discovery that the struggles of our lives are for us. They are treasure boxes to be opened rather than enemies to be resisted. When we find ourselves contracting it any way, tightening our bodies, holding our breath, wanting what is not here, not wanting what is, feeling the urge to be compulsive, these are all signals that we have gotten stuck again in the struggles of our mind, and we have a choice about whether or not we will stay there. By simply recognizing what is going on and then bringing it into the light of our compassionate curiosity, we can bring our attention back into the fullness of life and the fullness of who we truly are, right here, right now. And that is the fourth gift. The gift of being truly alive. The joy of coming home to this moment is a million times greater than any fleeting joy that compulsions can bring. That is what happened for me on my porch on 9/11. As I met my grief, I got out of the stories in my head and instead was fully present for life. I saw the autumn leaves beginning to turn gold. I heard the music of the waterfall in my pond. And I watched the play of the squirrels in my yard. I was fully there, available to life the moment it appeared out of mystery. I realized with an even deeper commitment that this was my gift to life, especially to the many people who had lost their lives on that day. They died because of human beings who were caught in their own reactive stories. Those moments when I move beyond my own struggles and reconnect with life right here and right now, I become a part of the healing of our troubled planet. As you relearn how to open to life, you will forget and remember and forget and remember what we have explored 1,000 times. It doesn't matter. It is all a part of the process of awakening. Tens of thousands of people have walked this path before you and have experienced the same remembering and forgetting. And tens of thousands of people will walk after you, aided by your willingness to return over and over again to the life and the challenges you have been given. Whenever you find yourself despairing, feeling that you have lost your way, just take a deep breath and say, "It's okay." For whether you feel it or not, it is. And if you need a deeper remembering, go out and lie down on the earth, feeling it supporting you as you imagine the possibility of having a deep and abiding love affair with yourself and with life. It is possible to be this connected, to be this comfortable in your own skin. It is possible to trust yourself and your life so much that you are healed to your core. It is not only possible, it is your birthright. The wonderful thing about healing and being healed by your compulsions is that as you heal, so too does the earth. The challenges you have been given are the challenges we all experience. Your compulsions have been experienced by presidents and by street people. That self-hate you get lost in is felt by great opera singers and by children living on the streets of Calcutta. The despair that overtakes you is experienced by people living in abusive relationships and by world leaders trying to make a difference. The fear you know so well is felt by children going to school every morning and by the parents who are seeing them off. You have been given your compulsion and all the fear and hate and despair that come with it to wake up. And as you meet yourself with understanding and mercy, you clear the pathway for every other human being to be healed in this way too. So be willing to show up. Tuck the words, "It's okay," into your heart, and then open to your compulsions and to your life. Live in the questions so that they become a beacon of light on the path back to you. Be curious, and over, pause and open to your life, however it is in this moment. Everything you need is right here, right now.
Mary has taught extensively since the early 1980s, speaking and offering retreats, individual counseling, and ongoing groups, where people can come together and experience the miracle of awakening. If you want to know more about Mary's work, please visit her website at www.maryomalley.com.